So, Andrew, thank you so much for being on the Pineapple Labs podcast. I really appreciate it. You're doing awesome things, especially just moving here from Gainesville. That's definitely a big lift, you know.
Right.
And I think it's been a good move, and you all are in a great area with a perfect view of the river. Like, I'm dude, jealous of what y'all got. Exactly. You'll wake up, say, how's the river today? Y'all, I can just say, hey, Andrew, how's the river? It's like me coming all the way down there and like looking at it. But if you can give a intro about like who you are, what your business does, how long have y'all been around, and just general knowledge about your business.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm Andrew. I am the head coach of the Gorilla Garage, which is my online training business. It was my online and in-person training business while I was up in Nova, but now it's just online and all my clients are still up there, and I got some other clients around the country. And so that's the main business that I have that I'm running right now. And then the second one that I'm starting here in Fredericksburg, it's called Roll 20 Health and Fitness. And it's a it is going to be primarily just a Brazilian jiu-jitsu academy, and then eventually it's going to also be a training studio once I get that stuff up and running. It's all going to be in my basement for now, so I'll be fun. No commute is nice.
Definitely. I feel like everyone has gotten used to the remote work life, you know, people work from home. It'll be nice that what you have like a 20 feet commute or something to under your basement.
Right. Not even 20 feet. Yeah it's like like 10, you know.
Yeah, before for me, my commute was from my bed to my desk, which is like 2 feet.
Right. And then,
I remember days that I was working in my undies, and there were even times when I used to go down in the morning, and I remember one time, I think one of my roommates was like, just checking, like, you know, hey, we're having someone come over, make sure you put pants on. I was like, that's for me.
That's really
because
funny.
Like, literally, if I could roll out of bed and be my undies at work, I'm like, hey, there's no dress code.
The real question is, are you in your undies right now, or do you have pants on?
I definitely have pants on. But if this was like, let's say like 9 o'clock in the morning, it might have been undies. You might have.
But by the afternoon, you have to have a little bit of a clothing standard.
Exactly, because you know, I can't go on my undies, man. It'll be too much trouble out there.
yeah, true that. You know, that was actually one of the issues with like the onset of the quarantine that I was having with work, is it was so easy to just keep working. And like once I was working from home, just like I never had any stop because I never had to go anyplace, you know, and like it was actually pretty difficult to have a start and a stop time because I felt like because I'm home and I'm able to just work out in my underwear. That I can just like work out all day. Work in my underwear. I could just work all day. Exactly. And it was actually kind of like a double-edged sword, you know?
Exactly. I definitely have pulled some late night hours because it's like, oh, instead of me doing this tomorrow, I want to like, you know, wake up late or, you know, get up a little bit early. Yeah. So I can just, you know, stay up or just work in the middle of the night because I have to get up to use the bathroom. So I can't fall back asleep. So let me just get this done real quick.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's kind of like a tricky to have that work-life balance, you know, when
exactly
when, like,
that's
work
like
is constantly at home.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the one thing I feel like people have. I think it's gotten better now since remote work is more common now. So I think like the work-life balance is kind of being restored. Like, because before it was like, oh, I'm just working from home. I can't separate my work from my home life. And then I can't get out because everything's closed. And now it's like, I can go outside again. I can start doing stuff again. So it's like, I think it's like a better balance of it, which I think for most people is like better for their mental health, better for like, you know, relationships and everything.
Yeah,
so.
100%. Yeah, 100%. I actually made a rule for myself as much as possible. I try to work. I also just I'm better at work when I actually like go someplace like Wegmans or someplace that has some free Wi-Fi. Because at home, there's so many things that distract me from the tasks that I need to get done, you know? But yeah, anyways. Yeah.
No, I was like, I love working at like a Gore downtown. Their coffee, number one, is amazing, but also just like the atmosphere, like especially if it's like not too hot of a day, like sitting outside in the outdoor area, is great vibe out there.
Yeah, so that's good, man. Yeah, coffee messed me up. So I don't like I'm on some seriously I'm on some new ADHD medication, and it like just a little bit of just like honestly like this much coffee, I'll say this much coffee, like not even half a cup. And I start like shaking and I start sweating and like my adrenaline like spikes up and stuff. It's such an uncomfortable feeling. So I like rarely drink any caffeine nowadays.
Dang, I don't know how you do that. I've run on coffee. Like, I literally had a Red Bull like less than an hour ago.
Yeah.
I guess that's like me on the caffeine train.
Right. Well, if like one of the things that the medicine it like gives me a little bit more like energy. Not really like energy, like it doesn't make me feel energized, but it makes me feel like less sleepy, I guess. So I don't find myself yawning as much as I did when I'm off it.
Oh, okay.
Something, you know, something going on with like the chemical makeup in my brain, but it helps me feel a little bit less drowsy, I guess.
Definitely, I feel, because you need to be like, you know, I guess most people, like, we want to have that razor, you know, focus, that alert,
Yeah.
you know, so I don't feel groggy at 2 o'clock, you know, yawning. It's like, oh, I just need an afternoon nap.
Right.
But like, if it was a weekend, I'll be like, all right, I can take my 2 o'clock afternoon nap. I'm like, during the weekend, like, should I or
Yeah.
should I not?
Yeah, I've actually been napping a lot more, Charles, because I've found that napping is a lot more helpful to me than caffeine. Like when I'm sleepy and like I just make I've decided to like genuinely just try to like make the time for myself. Give myself the time to nap, even if it's just like 20 minutes, because it's a form of self-love. That's really what it is, really what it comes down to for me. I was so against naps for the longest time because I felt like it made me weak. That's what I would tell myself. Like you can't nap, Andrew, else you're going to be weaker. You have to fight through the fatigue and the drowsiness. And it's so dumb. Like naps are a form of self-love, you know?
Exactly. I agree. It's definitely a form of, like, you know, loving ourselves and, you know, in general, like, self-care.
Yeah.
So, but
Yeah, I agree. I agree, man.
all right, let's jump in. So,
Yeah.
what has been your biggest failure and what do you learn from it?
Yeah, I got I try to look at I won't say it's a unique outlook on failure. I'll say it's like a less common one because I think everybody likes to look at failure in this sort of way of like have you ever heard of like using like failing forward is how it's described sometimes.
Yep, I've heard of that. Yep.
And that's what I try to do. And so as much as possible, I don't see a failure as a failure if I can learn from it and look back on it and be comfortable, like kind of like reliving it in my head, you know? At that point, it's like less defined as a failure for me. And so I was trying to, I'm trying to think of like times in my life when I am like genuinely embarrassed or discouraged. Like I have a lot of regrets. For sure, you know, I can tell you a lot of regrets that I have, but in terms of like failures that I remember, for the most part, if I'm like able to learn something from it and fail forward, like we were just saying, then I feel like it, I don't really qualify it quite as much as a failure in my head. But when I look back on it and I'm like cringing, you know, and I'm like cringing and there's like an embarrassment factor into it and like a lot more regret involved in that failure, then that's when I constitute a failure. So I'm trying to think like so like I'll tell you my failure like one of my biggest failures, but I didn't really learn anything from it, you know, because it's still hard for me to get by.
Exactly.
And one of them is you know I compete in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and so there's this one competition that I was preparing for a couple years back, and I put in like tons of work for it. Ton like hours a day, man. Like I would do like 2, 3, 4 hours of training a day,
Oh my
and
gosh, that's a lot.
I was on a performance enhancing drug at the time, so I actually could do it. Like it's a SARM, so it's basically like a less intense form of a steroid, you know. I'm not on anything anymore. That can I cuss on this? Can I
No, you're
cuss?
good. You're good.
Yeah, that shit fucked me up. I think that like really messed me up, like anxiety and depression wise. I remember during that bout of training that like there were times when like I would like get dry mouth and my stomach would cramp up so much because I was so anxious about the upcoming fight. and I was so anxious about training. Like, I wouldn't be able to, I wouldn't, my training would be like just so bad because the anxiety and the anxiety in my head was so great. Like, my stomach would, was cramping up and stuff. And that was the worst my anxiety ever got. Anyways, so yeah, I was you know, training so long. I was on this, I was on a SARM, so I was in like the best shape of my life and training constantly 3 or 4 hours a day. And then I got to the fight, we went at it, and I lost in 10 seconds. Less, maybe less than 10 seconds. And that was one of the most, that was the biggest, one of the biggest failures in my life. And like something that I have a really hard time learning from because it was so quick and I just feel so embarrassed about it, you know? So that one, like, I would definitely constitute as like a straight up failure. And then something that it's been really hard for me to learn forward from. And then like I have something else that's been really influential in my business life and in my personal life of being a being very open and honest about the things that I don't know. Some advice I got at the beginning of my career was fake it till you make it. And I accepted that as like really helpful, and it was for a certain part, for a certain period. But then I found that I just didn't like talking like that and living like that. Like, I knew everything, that I just had to fake the fact that I knew everything. You know what I'm saying? That's like a failure that I really learned from. And I am now a lot more comfortable and honest and open when a client or a student asks me a question about something. I am much more open to saying, I don't know, or like, I try to say, I don't know, let's figure it out together, kind of a thing. And that's usually more of an endearing process than just pretending like I have all my shit together and I know everything about fitness and jujitsu. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense because, like, I'd rather have someone be honest to me up front and say, I really don't know. Like you were saying, like, let's go about it together, because I think number one, you can learn in that the client or other person learns as well, because it's not helpful to everyone and to anyone really if you try to fake it till you make it, because either someone gets hurt, someone gets burned, or and then something bad ends up happening, or your reputation gets damaged or something. So I
Yeah,
just
for
be
sure.
open and honest up front. So
Yeah,
I guess
exactly. And I feel like it's, sorry, you go ahead.
I don't know about to jump on the next one, but if you have a thought to finish it.
The one thing I was gonna add was it's just more human, and it makes us more endearing to each other when we're able to be honest and like open about our faults and like kind of our weaknesses, if you will. And people just like, I feel like know-it-alls or people who pretend to be know-it-alls, try to be know-it-alls, like can make people less comfortable, I guess. And it's less endearing to be a know-it-all. And I think that's like a big failure that I had when I first started off, was I tried to be a know-it-all. And I've learned a lot from that since then. And I've tried to be as like open with my clients and with people about not knowing everything and not knowing something specific. And it's okay to not know something and being comfortable with that, you know?
Definitely. So going off of that, who are the three most influential people in your life and why?
Yeah, man, this is tough. I was hoping you would start me off with some like soft balls, but instead you're like starting off with like the heaviest, deepest stuff.
Oh
And so
no,
I
on this
like
podcast
how that goes.
we dive right in. There's no
Yeah, I like it. I like
softies
it. Well, let me ask you this. Do you consider like influential just positive influence, or would you consider negative or like not just like kind of like bad feelings towards someone? Would you consider that to be still be like influential? You know what I'm saying?
I'll say go with both. Go with both, like, because
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes that the other, like, the negative one kind of like fuels you to kind of get you, you know, I guess that edge of like, you know, like to
Right.
where you are. So definitely go with
Right.
both.
Yeah, for sure. Because I was thinking, I was trying to think, and I'm like influential. Okay, does that just mean like influential in a positive way? Because there are definitely people have been influential in my life in a negative way, you know. And I don't know. And it's hard for me to narrow things down to just narrow the people who have been influential in my life to just three. Two of the biggest mentors in my life, in a positive way, Justin Ulrich was one of my, it was my youth pastor and pastor and since I was like middle school until like 20 or something like that. He was huge in developing my character and in my life. And then Sean Stoopman, who is the owner of Silverback Academy, where I just moved from, the gym where I just moved from. Huge influence, business mentor, jiu-jitsu mentor, life mentor, in my, you know, and both of those guys have had a huge impact on my character and like kind of realizing what I do and do not want from life and how I want to conduct myself business-wise, family guy-wise, you know, as a husband. And that's been super helpful in a positive way. And I think from a negative standpoint, there are like, well, I don't want to like give any names, but there are like people in my life who are very good at what they do.
Yep.
And so I appreciate from an industry standpoint, I appreciate what that person is doing and how good they are at their job. And I'm able to appreciate and take things from that, but their personality just kind of really grinds my gears. And I, you know, I like as a person, I think that they are just a tough person to be around. And that just kind of like pushes me to go the other way. You know, like there are these things about this person, they have this certain characteristic. And I know this is being super general because I don't want to call anybody out over a podcast.
Oh, definitely,
have a
for
problem
sure.
with somebody. If I have a problem with somebody, I've said it to their face at this point, you know? And the character that this person conveys and possesses, I just want to be like completely different from that. They're really good at their job, but from their character, I just want to be a different person, you know? And so that's kind of like the negative influence is also a certain level of influence that I think we need to appreciate. But it does influence us. That does influence me. And then, like, I know you just said three, but I'm thinking about it now. You know, like my dad, my brothers are like my best friends, and like they're huge positive influences and negative influences. You know, they're like, you know, douchebags sometimes, but they're really good dudes. My best friends. Wife, Michaela, is a tremendous impact in my life, a huge influence and like very inspirational to me. Tons of other people, man. It's so hard for me to just narrow down three people. There are lots and lots of people that have been influential in my life, and I'm super thankful for that. And I think that's like one of the reasons why I like to do what I like to do. I like to do what I do because I have all these people who have influenced me in a positive way, and I feel like I'm capable of doing it. And I think I'm super blessed and thankful for that.
Definitely. I was literally interviewing my good friend Kay Scarlett literally yesterday, and one of the things definitely, you know her, we kind of came to a consensus that it takes a village to raise someone, and like it definitely, and that's why I feel like this question is like, she said the same thing. It's like, it's more than three people. It's really, it's all the people, like your parents, your friends, your brothers, you know, like everyone that's poured into you that has really gotten you to the point to where you are today.
Absolutely. And in some ways, as we get older, more self-aware and more self-actualized, like it sounds really weird, but there's almost like this responsibility that we have to ourselves to surround ourselves with people that are going to raise us well. Like, obviously we're both grown ass adults, but at the same time, there's still plenty of development, plenty of growth that we both have to do. And so it's like, we have this responsibility to have a tribe, to have a village that's going to help keep raising us well, you know?
Definitely. I agree. All right, next question. What's one thing you wish you knew when you started your business?
Okay. I wish I knew like what healthy expectations were. I wish I knew what healthy expectations were for myself, because I definitely, for a long time, I've just got started getting better at this, like just like towards the end of 2020. I have these expectations for myself that are kind of very perfectionist minded and are very steeped in this and a mindset of doing the perfect absolute amount to become recognized and become like heroic in a sense. It's like a very my therapist and I have kind of figured out that it's derived from these heroic archetypes that I really looked up to as a kid, like Captain America, Batman, like all these superheroes that are all in the comics are infallible. You know, they never lose. They're like these perfect archetypes of willpower and persistence and virtue. And but it's like real life is about failure, and real life has a lot of struggle in it, and real life has vice as well as virtue. My biggest fallback, the biggest thing that I wish I knew when I started this business is how to have healthy, gentle expectations for myself. Because I think my business would be in a much better place than it would be right now. And I think I would be in a better place than I am right now. It's like night and day difference. I'm able to enjoy my life and enjoy work so much more because now I feel like at the end of the day, I've gotten a full day's worth of work done. Before, it's like I'm never satisfied. I'm never content because I always feel like I have more to do because I shoot myself in the foot. The expectations that I set for myself are like disingenuine and too lofty to begin with, you know? I wish I really knew how to have more gentle, loving expectations for myself.
And I definitely agree, 'cause I feel like everyone as like a first-time entrepreneur is like saying, all right, like what does the entrepreneur look like? Everyone sees like the Instagram entrepreneur or like this person, like the
The
grind
rise
doesn't
and
stop.
grind. Yeah,
Exactly, rise
exactly.
and grind. And you're working 24 hours a day, like 80
Yeah,
hour
dude, shut
weeks, you
up,
know.
man.
Exactly, but it's really not realistic because that's why you have so many people burnt out. Like, you know, like some business owners, you know, they end up selling the business because they're tired, they don't want to keep doing it. But I feel like businesses help communities, and like, you know, you want to have like loving owners and people that can pour into others. I feel like that's one of the ways that people can pour back in is through business. And like, you can't really do that if you're rising and grinding. I feel like it's like a terrible perception of what entrepreneurs are and like kind of that grind. Because I mean, yes, you have to grind because I mean, you're working for yourself. You're not employed by anyone, but like, you need to have the right type of grind, like the right kind of grind. Like, you know, I want to work for myself, but like, what's your why behind that? Why am I grinding? So, and I think that's very
Absolutely.
important of like, you know, setting realistic and healthy expectations. Like saying, like, this is where I should be 3 months ago, but not based off of like where someone else is at. Like, where can I be? Because you're yourself. You're not another person.
Yeah, that's huge. That comparison, exactly. You're not another person. You're yourself. You like that's huge, Charles. And that's never something that I got until, like I said, like towards the end of 2020. Because I always wanted to be these other people, negative and positive, that I saw with a great amount of success that I wanted. And then also my perception of this success being a little skewed. It's always like, yeah, like why isn't this working for me? Why can't I be where this person is? Well, I'm a different person than whoever is like whoever I'm comparing myself to in the moment. It's not a fair comparison. I've got different stuff going on. I'm a completely different personality, you know, a different environment. Yeah, it's just like you've got to be gentle. I really wish I knew to be gentle and reasonable with myself. And I thought that I was being reasonable with myself. That was probably kind of the biggest issue, is I genuinely thought I was being reasonable, that I could like do the world work 80 hours a day. And like how would you say, like if you could spitball how many hours you work a week, what would you say you do?
I try to keep a healthy balance of like, I try to do like a 9 to 5 is somewhat like a normal. So I try to keep a 40-hour work week, which I feel like people might say, oh, it's definitely not enough. But I'm like, but like, my version of like what I want a week to get done is like I want to have an evening. I want to have a day to where like let's say if I want to have a pool day, I can fit a pool day in, and then like you know work a little bit at night, kind of like. So, I mean, I just want to keep it to where, like, you know, have some flexibility, you know, not like, I feel like everyone's like, oh, saying, all right, you don't have time to do this, or like, you turn, like, I feel like there needs to be time for margin. I feel like being an entrepreneur kind of like allows margin to happen in a sense. Yeah. So,
yeah, allows margin to happen. That's really wise. I really appreciate that. And I think that that's something you were talking about, like feeling like you constantly have to, I forgot exactly what you said, but what came to mind when you're saying like constantly working harder earlier, the idea to me is it's better to work smarter, not harder. And using the margin that you possess as an entrepreneur is a intelligent strategy to work smarter. Yeah. Like 40 hours a week. I think like that's awesome. You know, like I was working, like I was trying to always work 60 or 80 hours a week at the beginning of this. Yeah, dude. It's like, the thing is I had to sacrifice, like, I don't like the pool as much as you do, I don't think, but I had to, whatever my pool day was, like, I had to sacrifice my pool day, you know? Mm-hmm. And I realized I just didn't want to. Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was about to say, like, you know, like, sometimes that's what requires, because in the beginning, you have to kind of, like, put in those hours, like, because you're just getting yourself out there. I mean, even now, I mean, I should be putting in those hours, but I don't necessarily put in as hours. I think, if anything, you probably work longer hours than I do, but you're putting in good work. I definitely see the fruits of it, so.
Thanks, man. Yeah, well, likewise. And like, that's on reasonable hours, you know, and it's like a reasonable amount of work-life balance. And yeah, you're like, you're totally right. You have to have sometimes there has to be like the grinding aspect, especially when we're first starting off and you don't, your money, your business is making zero money, then you do have to pull like 68 hours a week. But I don't think that has to be the standard. Unless, you know, some people might be able to make that work, you know, like some individuals who it's their life, you know, like both of us live a lot in community, maybe a person who's a little bit more introverted, isolated kind of a person, you know, they like, I don't know. I'm sure for some people like 80 hours, 60 hours could work. God bless them. Let them find all the success in the world, you know, get at it. But I just wish I knew that when I first started my business, that sort of approach just isn't for me, you know?
Definitely. If anything, like, it's just the glamorized, like we talked about earlier, it's just like like entrepreneurs are glamorized for not having time. It's like, I'm also constantly grinding, no sleep.
I'm so busy. I can't hang out. I'm too busy or whatever.
Exactly. I mean, yes. I mean, that's one thing I'm learning now is like the importance of saying no, but also like there needs to be like saying no for a reason. So
Yeah. I had a stupid amount of pride in how busy I was. Just felt like it was like a mark of a badge of honor to be, you know, exhausted, bags under my eyes, you know, getting like, oh, sweet. Like, yeah, I feel so cool. I'm only getting 5 hours of sleep tonight because I have to like wake up at 5 a.m. for a client. I think it's like, I don't know. I think you're right about it being a very glamorized position, but it's not. I don't think it's glamorous to be like exhausted all the time.
I definitely agree. And this is like literally the perfect segue, because like I was about to ask, like, what does a typical work week look like for you? I guess a Monday to Friday. So.
Yeah, Monday to Friday. Well, I actually work 7 days a week. So really? But it's not like, it's not always going into the office. It's not like, right, especially right now, like, you know, all my work is virtual. So, so that's number one. And I work 7 days a week, but it's not seeing clients every day, and it's not a standard 9 to 5, let's say. So like on Sundays, I just work from like 2 to 7:30 or 8:30 sometimes after work a little bit later. And every day, Sunday through Friday, no matter what work I have left, my cutoff time for work is at 8:30. And that's like a good little bit of balance I have for myself. No matter what, if I didn't get to it by 8:30, then, you know, whatever, put it down. You got to do it tomorrow, Andrew. I got a little alarm on my watch, goes off every day at 8:30. You know, okay, great, work's done. Put the computer away and go hang out with the family. the Monday through Friday, now that I'm in Fredericksburg, like all looks the same. You know, like I just it's all virtual work from Wegmans or, you know, whatever coffee shop I go to. It all works. It's all working from home and virtual work. Back in Chantilly, I'll wake up, you know, have my quiet time, do like my morning ritual and stuff. I'd have morning clients, usually go until about 11 to noon. I would work out around that time, either jujitsu or lifting, go back home, get some lunch, do a little bit of work, and then come back to the gym for my evening shift, which usually ended at about 7, 7:30. And then I might do a little bit of work left, you know, get some stuff done until 8:30, and that'd be it. So definitely the grind, the work week in Chantilly was a bit more packed. I had good balance with like those specific breaks. On Saturdays, no matter what, my cutoff time is always at noon for on Saturdays. So on Saturdays, I basically like work a half day. And then on Sundays, I try not to start work until 2 p.m. So I have like a nice buffer of 24 hours where I'm not doing any work. And that works pretty well for me.
So that's awesome, dude. Because at least you're working in some Sabbath, because I guess like for you, and like of course the needs of your client, but at least you have some time for you, because I feel like a lot of people don't realize the balance of rest or like to take the time off. So
Yeah, it's huge, man.
that's cool that you're working into your schedule, even though yes, technically you are working, I guess like 6 to almost 7 days a week, but you have like a at least your Sabbath, not necessarily a whole like a day, like you know a Saturday or Sunday, but like you have like from Saturday at noon to like Sunday at 2, so that's your rest time. So
Exactly,
that's cool.
exactly. And that's necessary. And I found that I'm a little bit more of an introvert than an extrovert. And so I'm found that I probably am going to start taking basically combining Saturdays and Sundays. So like I think just Mondays through Fridays is when I'm going to be seeing clients and doing classes, training students. And then Saturdays and Sundays, those are going to be my days to do administrative work and do more like introverted work. Being an introvert in an extroverted profession is really difficult. It's
Really?
tiring, man. Yeah, it's because I feel like all of my extroverted energy needs like no client is going to want to work with me if, you know, I'm just like always tired and morose and I'm not giving them any sort of extroversion. I'm not giving them any sort of energy that they can feed off of and we can play off of each other. That's huge. People need to like my personality. And I think I'm a decently likable person, but my extroversion definitely tires me out by the end of the day. By the end of the day, like poor Michaela, that's when she gets the morose kind of like sullen Andrew every time I come back from the gym. Now it's a lot different. I can be introvert all day, but definitely when I was working regularly with clients in Chantilly, all my extroverted energy. I'm happy to give it to my clients, but I just need to be a little bit more take two in Fredericksburg. I'm just going to be a little bit more considerate to my own energy levels, you know.
Definitely. And I think that's important because you have to know yourself before you can help others. And I think that's really important because if your tank's empty, then especially because like you know for myself as like a guy who's single, like all I have to worry about like you know coming back to my wife. But now it's like you're out with clients and like I need to like interact with her, and like it's just a little bit different. So I think that's important of like knowing like where you're at and managing it. So that's pretty cool. So
I appreciate it, man.
definitely. So how big is your team right now, and what constitutes a great team?
I only have me on my team. I've been trying to get Michaela to work for me for a while so she can do like stuff that I don't want to do, you know, like the administrative stuff that I don't like to do. I want to train her on how to do that. So fingers crossed that happens at some point. But so right now it's just me. You know, I think what makes a great team is the ability to be honest with each other and to be open, like that level of vulnerability and openness and honesty with each other. Like we were just talking about, it endears us to one another. And I think that's really important. I've been on a couple teams that have been like work-wise that have been, you know, some have been good, some have been bad. And I found that it was kind of like night and day. The bad ones are like clicky and kind of secretive, and the good ones are open, and the good ones are also smaller. I don't know. I feel like that might make a difference. Like a little bit smaller team instead of like having so many people. But yeah, I don't really have too much insight in what makes a good team, but I feel like based on the experience that I have with the teams that I've worked on, worked, yeah, worked with, worked on, openness and like a sense of community, honesty, vulnerability with one another, that seems to be pretty huge.
Definitely, definitely. I think,
What
yeah,
about you?
honestly,
What do you
because,
think?
right, I think what constitutes a great team is, I think, trust and vulnerability. Because I think if you don't have trust, then that means you can't, like, let's say you can't have, like, the last person be at the office late because you can't trust that person with, like, no equipment or something. So I think trust is
Yeah.
number one, because you can trust and get your stuff done, trust that you'll work on time, trust that, like,
Yeah.
you don't have to be on top of people. And then I
Yeah.
think vulnerability, because I feel like there are times, I mean, of course, at work, there's work is work, but also I feel like sometimes, like, work is almost like the point where people either get a break from the family or work is kind of like their second family, or it's like because
Right,
some people
right.
don't have other people in their lives, so their coworkers become kind of like that strong friendship bond. They're kind of like what that, like, the strong bonds are formed at work. So being able to kind of have that place where you can be open with each other, because I feel like that's something that is not as common in society today. Even though, yes, mental health is taking a forefront, which I think is very important, and that's a great thing
Yeah.
that's happened. But it's also being able to have the people there that you can be like, I can be vulnerable with my coworker, or I can talk to my
Yeah.
boss about this because they can kind of help me advance forward or something. So I think being able to have that, to be real with each other, because I think that's when the real person comes out, when you're able to be vulnerable.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's a lot easier to help one another when you're the real person with one another, it's a lot
Exactly.
harder to help one another when you're just kind of fronting on everybody and
Exactly.
have being a different facade each time.
I agree, because you can't have, like, 'cause I can't be like one person at work versus one person at home,
Right.
or like in the community. It's like you need to be the same person. Like, I'm the same Charles here versus same Charles at home versus like the same son, hanging out with my sisters and my parents, and like, it's all the same person. So
Yeah, I agree. I agree, man.
what are the differences between you and your competitors?
So I try not to. A great piece of advice that I got was a while ago was find your open water. And the metaphor came from this idea that like you're an industry. It's like kind of like shark infested water, like a feeding frenzy of shark infested water, right? And it's like bloody and red from them all eating and everything like that. And so you for to make your mark to be successful, it's best if you find an industry or a niche within that industry that's open, clear, blue water. You know what I'm saying? Like no other sharks in that water. And I found that has helped me kind of understand that they like I don't need to look at anybody as a competitor. And as much as I can, I try not to look at people as competitors because it helps me to be more cooperative and open. I get a little bit more scared, I think. I get a little bit more fearful when I look at people as competitors because it's not like I'm going to win anything, Like I'm not in this for a contest for a medal. I'm not trying to be the best in the world. I'm just trying to help people, and I'm trying to help people improve their fitness, improve their relationship with themselves, and improve their understanding and enjoyment of jujitsu. So, and I know that like the everybody can get a little piece of that pie, and I'm super content with my piece of the pie, and how I carve that piece out for me, it's really a matter of finding a niche or finding an industry that is the open water. And so that's helped me out a lot in my relationships with other businesses. I'm able to like learn a lot more from them when I don't feel like they're a competitor. The idea of like competing with somebody, I'm like, oh my God, you're a competitor. And I just like, I think like I outright have a tendency to dislike someone, dislike business, kind of like talk it down in my head if I see them as a competitor, but they could be doing like something really good and I want to learn from that. The definitely though, what differentiates me from my industry, differentiates me from like, you know, makes me stand out in the industry, I'll say, is the fact that I like it, it's not as niche as it was, but it still is a little niche. Like I really like to and prefer to train and coach like nerds and geeks, people who like play video games, D&D, are all into pop culture, because those are my people. That's who I am. And it's so much easier for me to talk about training and lifting and jujitsu with those people because I can translate it into a language that we understand very easily. Like just the other day, I was trying to get this a understanding of like I did an assessment with a client, and that's basically where I like take them through some movements to look at like their athleticism, you know, like muscular imbalances that could cause them pain or injury, that sort of thing. And I was trying to just to describe to him how one particular balance is affecting the rest, one particular imbalance is affecting the rest of his body. And I was having a hard time explaining it, and then I explained it in video game terms, and he understood it right away. So it's like that sort of thing, you know. It's a lot more enjoyable and easy for me to coach nerds and geeks. I like coaching anyone and everyone. If I jive with you, I jive with you. I'll work with you.
Oh yeah, for
But
sure. I agree.
yeah, the preference is nerds and geeks, and I really enjoy that. I think that. And this is going to sound like almost like a cop-out answer. In a similar way, what makes me stand out in the industry is just myself. People don't buy coaching, they buy coaches. And my personality, who I am, like that's what makes me stand out. I just want to do a good job of ex properly expressing who I am and properly showing people who I am in a way that is going to, you know, endear people to me and my business, which, you know, it's like I'm sure you know social media is really good at that, and just being yourself with your students or clients. And I think that's like really it, man. Just like I love training nerds and geeks, and I'm just myself, and I think that like ourselves is what makes us stand out in the industry. I, like no rhyme or reason to it.
Definitely. I agree because I like the analogy of like what you're saying, that like, you know, people don't buy coaching, they buy a coach. And that really just rings true for, like for you, because especially I'm not much of a gamer, so I probably wouldn't understand the video game like analogy as much. But if you put in a sports analogy, you know, I might understand that more. So that's really cool how you can kind of break it down into a way that people could understand. And I feel like that's like always one of the best ways to teach is in language, like you have a common language. So
I agree, man. I
definitely.
agree. It helps out a
So
lot.
what do you think your mission in life is?
Oh man.
Definitely no
Another softball. Yeah, another softball.
softies
Let's see. My mission in life is, as much as possible, my mission in life is to get out of the way, get out of the way of the work that God is trying to do in this world, and do in this world and in people and in the people around me. And I think that it's also like I do that as best I can through my business by helping people come to terms with their abilities and their capabilities through exercise, through fitness, through nutrition, and to love themselves more, like learn to appreciate and love themselves more for what they can do and for their ability to lift weight, move fast, whatever. As you know, health is like a balance between spiritual health, emotional slash mental health, and physical health. And I think that it's my honor to help people with the physical side of things, with physical fitness, free that guesswork up for them, so that there's a little bit more room. They have more time to spend on the spiritual. Hopefully, they have more time to spend on the spiritual and like mental, emotional health side of things. And it's a huge honor and privilege for me because I want to get out of the way of that. I can facilitate God influencing my clients and the people around me by like getting fitness, getting physical fitness out of that way so that they are more likely, there's a greater chance that they will be able to experience God in their lives and that the world will be able to experience God because like, yeah, I hope that makes sense. I want to get out of the way and I want to try to get as many things out of the way of God's ability to influence this world. You know, like I don't want to be in the way. I don't want anything in his way. And that's really what my business is trying to be, is like an expression of that mission, you know?
So definitely you're trying to lighten their load. So
yeah,
that's definitely,
yeah,
definitely. That's so. Definitely like an awesome way of putting it because I feel like in the modern day world, everyone has something going on that distracts them from this or that. So it's cool that how you're taking that approach of like, how can I serve you and like lighten your load so you can focus more
yeah.
on God and your also your other aspects of your health, like the mental health as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. And not even explicitly God either. I think that it can be implicit or and like subtle. God's influence on someone and the like pain-free movement, I think is like a blessing from God. It, like, I think that is a way for somebody to appreciate the power of God in their lives when they're able to move around day to day without any pain and they're able to play longer with their kids. They're able to bike for longer, enjoy the day longer because they don't have pain in their knees, their ankles, whatever, you know? And it's just such a huge honor and a privilege to be able to facilitate that sort of thing for my clients, for people. And yeah, and I think that my prayer is that at some point, like that will like, somehow that's going to open up a way for people to experience God. And like, yeah, I want to serve them by, like you said, lightening their load. And so that there's more opportunity for them to experience God. Yeah, I hope that makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense, definitely. What does success like to look like to you, and do you consider yourself successful?
So I feel like success is subjective. I feel like it's really like success is really about contentment and being content with where you are and how you're feeling. And I consider myself very successful because I am able to, my business, my work is able to sustain mine and my wife's lifestyle. And we're able to not just survive, you know, we're able to thrive and enjoy life. And that's a huge honor. And it is a huge blessing that I'm thankful for. It's just like, your success is kind of where you put it in the sand. Your success is going to be, success is where you put that line in the sand. You know, like I don't want somebody else to tell me what success looks like. I want to decide that for myself. Going back to what we were talking about earlier with the unhealthy expectations, you know, the unreasonable expectations, letting somebody else or something else tell me where the line of success is, I think that really feeds into unreasonable expectations, but deciding it for yourself is going to allow for a lot more contentment and a lot more success because you're able to actually decide that for yourself. You know, like success could just be like, I don't know, for someone, a successful online business could just be an extra $1,000 a month instead of you know, how the influencers and the business influencers are social media are always talking about like, 10K, 100K extra a month, right? Somebody doesn't always need to sacrifice all the time and energy to get that. It might just, yeah. like success to me or you might just be an extra $1,000 a month just to make a little bit more change to cover rent or go out a couple more times a week, whatever. And I think that that is really important. Contentment, I think, is real success. Being able to be content with what you have, where you're at. Yeah.
Definitely. I think content is an important word because I feel like that's where a lot of like I guess in America it's like consumerism or kind of like the next like, you know, keeping up with the Joneses or whatever.
I think
that's where a lot of it stems from, is like, you know, not being content. And I think that's like, if people are more content with what they have, then I feel like a lot of the issues we have in America would not exists as much.
Right. Oh, dude, I totally agree. I totally agree.
So.
Yeah, and the success is like, man, I'm blanking, but it's almost like you kind of shoot yourself in the foot when you allow something else, like when you allow culture or someone else to tell you what success is. It's because like it's subjective to that person. You're never actually going to find it. Like you were saying earlier, we're completely different people, you know? But yeah.
Definitely. What are the best resources that have helped you along the way?
There have been a few. There's a book called, or there are two books. There's one called Ignite the Fire by Jonathan Goodman. He runs a website called the Personal Trainer Development Center. That's been huge in my skills as a coach, like soft skills, you know, like programming and everything. Like that's what the certification helped with, but soft skills, like getting psychological buy-in and everything. That book really helped with that, like actually being able to be empathetic and help somebody move from point A to point B in a practical way. And then in a similar vein, there's another book called Conscious Coaching by Brett Bartholomew. And it's like those two books are very, very similar, like dealing more with like the psychology and the soft skills of coaching and the business skills of coaching. Those are huge. And those have been super influential to me. I think that the most helpful resource, though, has always been my mentors, like people that I can go to and ask questions directly to and get like practical help and answers. Those are, yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Definitely. Cool. So,
Yeah.
what advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs?
Let's see. I mean, going back to what I was saying, like understand what good expectations on like understand what you're going to be willing to sacrifice. What you are and what you aren't willing to sacrifice for success, what you decide for yourself to be success, because that's going to influence those reasonable expectations, ones that are gentle and loving to yourself. I think that understanding that growth and change requires sacrifice, and then also talk like figuring out honestly, asking yourself what you are actually willing to sacrifice to get that success. I think that's something that I going back to the earlier question, I really wish that I knew that and what I hope that other entrepreneurs get as well. It's not always worth it to sacrifice family time to get like an extra hour of work done, you know? So I'd rather
Definitely.
hang out with my wife than work.
Definitely. So, all right, now it's time for all the fun questions, the
Okay, good.
lightning round. So, what's the best joke you've ever heard?
Best joke I've ever heard, man. I don't listen to hear a lot of jokes, I don't think, because I was trying to think of this. I was trying to think of this, and I don't like have like any good like knock-knock jokes or anything, man. The one thing that it's super dumb. The one thing that I have is the my brothers and I will do this dumb joke with each other like all the time. We're looking for something in like the kitchen or at my parents' house or whatever, and we're like, "Where's the, you know, where are the knives?" And then my brother will be like under there, and he won't point to anywhere. And they're basically you try to get the other person to say underwear, and that's it. It's just it's so dumb, but that's the
That's funny.
joke. Yeah.
Oh man. So, if you're an ice cream flavor, what would you be and why?
There's a flavor called Double Dunker ice cream, and I would be it because it's just the best flavor. It's my favorite. It's got like a little bit of everything, and it's delicious. And that's, yeah, Double Dunker all the way.
Okay. All right, cool. What's the funniest thing that happened to you recently?
Let's see. My little brother showed me some really good memes the other day. Like he just had me cracking up with all these memes that he was just handing me. And we were just sitting and watching a movie, and he just kept looking up memes on his phone and then passing them over to me. And that was really, really funny. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, some memes are very, very funny because they're so relevant and so true.
Yeah. Yeah,
Like,
absolutely.
especially like some of the starter pack memes, those are so good.
What are the starter pack memes?
So like let's say you have like like gym bro starter pack. I have like protein and like lifting
Oh
weights,
yeah.
so like you know, like one
Yeah.
of those compilation kind of memes.
Yeah, those are good. Classic.
Yep, they're classic, but they're funny too.
They are
What's
really
your
funny.
hidden talent?
Do you know what LARPing is?
I've heard of it. I've seen it. I think it was in Role Models. I think they were
Yeah.
LARPing with
I LARP. I LARP. That's my secret talent. I'm a pretty good sword fighter because we used to do it as kids all the time with like wooden swords, and me and my brother would go LARPing now.
Is there like a LARPing league or like a LARPing place in
Yeah.
Fredericksburg?
Yeah. Yeah, no, not that I know of in Fredericksburg, but there's like a league that is has people from Maryland, Virginia, and DC, and we all meet up around here and LARP and stuff. We haven't done it in a year or so, obviously because of COVID, but it's starting up again in July, so we're pretty stoked about that.
I guess what do y'all live
Through
action
June.
role play? I guess is like specific games
It's
or
yeah, it's like fantasy stuff. So like we have like swords and like costumes, and we like fight each other and fight like monsters that people dress up as skeletons, and they're like the villains of the game, and we have to like fight them and everything, and it takes place in this imaginary world that everybody is like collectively adding to, and we go on quests to like beat up certain monsters and to get certain things. And then there are like people who are in charge of the league that come up with different challenges and scenarios that you have to overcome. It's fun.
All right, that's awesome. I'll definitely have to come check it out sometime.
If you've seen you're talking about role models, like what you remember from role models, that
Yes.
like that's basically it. Like no joke. It's like obviously role models is like a much more comedic version, but it like basically what you see on role models is what happens.
right. All right. What makes you smile?
What makes me smile? My dog and my wife make me smile.
Oh.
Yeah, my dog, my wife, my friends, yeah, all those things put a big smile on my face.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I appreciate
Yeah,
the
man.
time. Thank you for dropping knowledge on us, especially about LARPing and some BJJ, because I didn't really know
Yeah,
much
man.
about it. I'll definitely have to do some training because I've been interested in getting into it. So,
Yeah, just
I
let me know
guess.
when you want to start, and I'll let you know when the mats aren't here yet, but
Yeah.
let you know when all that's set up, and then it'll be fun to start.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be a glorified white belt, but I will work my way up.
That's
But yeah.
right. That's right, man. Everybody's got to start somewhere. I mean, everybody starts at a white belt. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
So, and I heard BJJ is
Awesome.
also good for fitness, and it's just in general too. So this podcast is gonna hold me to that. So yeah, in a
Awesome, dude.
couple months I'll be in a BJJ class with the BJJ
That's
class
right.
with Andrew.
That's right, baby. That's right. Awesome, bro. Yeah, and thank you so much for having me, Charles. Super, super flattered and very honored that you asked me to be on here. Really means a lot.
Yeah, no, it's when originally Becca and well, I was on my pool day with Becca and your wife Michaela,
Oh, really?
and they mentioned you. I'm like, all right, I need to get them on the podcast. So that's when Becca gave me your information. I reached out
Oh,
and
cool.
made it happen. But
Cool, man.
like I said, thank you so much and have a great day.
Likewise, man. Thank you. Bye.
All right, bye.